This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My special guest on Bent Notes is an Adelaide-born, multi-award-winning composer, bass player and producer who has composed music for groups varying in size from a trio up to an orchestra. Ross McHenry aims with his compositions to explore the modern Australian identity within the context of the globally interconnected musical landscape. We'll find out a little bit about what that means in a moment. His latest album, Nothing Remains Unchanged, provides 9 pieces of this journey of exploration. It is my pleasure indeed to bid a very warm Bent Notes welcome to Ross McHenry. Welcome, Ross.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well indeed, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to chat to us tonight.
It's my pleasure.
Now, composing for groups from a trio up to an orchestra in size, it sounds to me like a big difference, but is there a difference in composing just because it's bigger numbers?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that until I did the orchestral project last year, I would have said that, like, although there's a significant difference in, like arranging for a different size, also sort of the composition process was quite similar. But yeah, once you do get to the level of the orchestra, I actually know that process was quite different. And I think that the main difference, like, obviously the more people you have playing, the more carefully you have to write. It's kind of the joy of a trio or a quartet as a performer, and I think also the listener, is that it's a very kind of free and fluid format where, although you can be quite specific about the kind of the music itself, it's a very responsive kind of group where you really can go anywhere, provided you kind of have that kind of contract of trust between the performers. But, you know, an orchestra is very kind of restrictive. You just kind of write it exactly as you want it to a T, and then that's how it is. You know, and the interpretation is more in the hands, I guess, of the conductor than it is, like, kind of on the page in some ways. Like, the page is quite restrictive in that sense. Yeah, it's quite a different process. But then, you know, in a jazz context, you're always leaving space for improvisation, so it's kind of similarity from writing from a small group right of the way through to writing for, you know, a larger ensemble.
When you did get that performance, that was early last year, did the orchestra's performance differ from what you had expected, what you had imagined?
Yes, it did. It's an interesting one. I mean, there are just many more constraints in that space. Obviously, there are so many people. It's a weird thing because there's a lot more, because there's kind of a freedom in the way to so many different sound palettes that you can use. But even writing for that orchestra is, like, you kind of have to, it was intimidating at first. Yeah, it was kind of, like, how do you limit this in order to be able to kind of complete the project? It was more kind of one of the challenges for me being the first time around. But yeah, it did differ. And I think there was some kind of just logistical constraints on that. Like, you only have a certain number of calls when you're playing with a trio. It's kind of, there's much more kind of flexibility in terms of rehearsing certain things. But with lots of people, you're just going to have to keep going, and it's kind of in the hands of the conductor as well. So yeah, it did differ, but that was, in some ways, that was kind of was challenging, because maybe I'm a bit of a control freak or something, but I'm used to performing in my own ensembles and also directing the process of performance and recording to some degree. And it's going to have that kind of completely taken out of your hands. It's a strange process. I actually felt much more nervous listening to my work being what I often do, performing new works. It was, I don't know, something about kind of ceding control in that way. It was quite kind of strange the first time around. Maybe it's easier.
Oh, that's interesting. I had not thought that you might be more nervous hearing your composition performed than actually performing it.
Yeah,
wow.
Funny.
Was there a particular lure for you to write for the orchestra? Had it been something you had been wanting to do for a while?
Well, my mum, before I was born, for a number of years, was a professional ballet dancer. And so, kind of orchestral music, my mum's side of the family, was something that we always listened to, and was kind of in the house. even though I never really thought about it, and I wasn't like super into like orchestral music or chamber music really as a young person or a young adult, but I think you can't help but kind of be imprinted on from what you grew up listening to, kind of what's a part of that. The more things that I did in other areas of music, the more it kind of like doing something like that kind of, it started to become, you know, something that I wanted to do. And so I was just incredibly fortunate to be able to do it with the ASO last year. And you know, and once you've done it once, it's such an enormous undertaking because you kind of, you learn so much from doing it that you kind of like, oh, I want to do it again, because it's like the first time you do anything, you know, there's something about it because it's the first time, but then you also are very much using music as like an iterative process, and it's kind of as you make work, the work gets better. And so I'd like to do it again. Yeah, but I kind of apply what I've learned.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
We've been having a bit of a chat there about the, I suppose, would you call it the classical side or the cross-genre side of things? Where does that fit into an Australian identity from a musical perspective?
It's interesting. It's like sometimes when you hear like the way that perhaps you describe something, like you hear it back, and even I think, oh, what does that really mean? What am I trying to say? But I guess there's a kind of a necessity when you start learning, you know, an instrument or an art form or what have you, that there's a kind of, there's a replication process that you go through in order to be able to learn the art form. And it doesn't really matter what art form it is. It's like kind of an aspect of transcription that you go through, you know, and there is in jazz and there is in visual art, theatre, and you know, all of these kind of art forms you learn through replication, through copying things. But then at a certain point you kind of need to make, or even I also believe currently you need to also try to represent the way that you see the world, and that's not, at least for me, it's not kind of, it's not necessarily like a kind of grandiose statement about I've learned this and my perspective is this. It's just purely representing your kind of own emotional, your multi-layered emotional experience as honestly as you can through music. And of course, when we do that as Australian artists, when we're genuinely not trying to make, you know, music, because for me, I think in my early part of my career, I tried to make music, particularly that sounded like American music that I loved. And there's something kind of disingenuous about that process or the outcome of that process where it never quite sounds exactly like what you're going for because it doesn't truly represent you. Now when I make music, I don't try to make music that, and for a long time I haven't tried to make music that sounds like anything in particular, that just sounds like it's kind of as accurate as possible, this kind of undeniable replication of my own emotional experience in some way while composing, and then letting artists interpret that however they like. And I feel like that kind of process, although perhaps what I've just described is, sounds a little abstract, it kind of can't help but be reflective of who we are and where we are at. I think that when I listen back to, you know, and this is just an observation about the kind of really great Australian music and artwork that I love, I think it does, because I believe it also does what I've just described, it has a kind of a unique aspect to its identity that is the Australian experience. You know, when I listen to Paul Grabowski play, I hear the Australian experience. I hear the Melbourne experience, or Scott Tinkler, or if I'm listening to Paul Kelly, it's what resonates so broadly, I think, with other Australians is hearing ourselves fed back to us in some way, but not in a kind of, in a didactic way, or in a kind of not preaching a perspective, but simply reflecting something about the Australian experience that we also know to be true. So to whatever degree I'm successful in doing that, I don't know. You know, other people can be the judge, but certainly that's, you know, when I say that's what I'm trying to do, that is what I'm trying to do. I hope that it comes across in the music.
Your new album, which is called Nothing Remains Unchanged, is, I think, exactly what you've just described about putting your feeling into music. It's it's an album of much more than just a couple of tunes to fill an hour, and it certainly is more than just transcriptions or replication of music from other countries. It's an album that's got a nostalgic context to the inspiration for the compositions. The story behind the front cover image, I think, is absolutely beautiful because it's how you felt about a place in your life as opposed specifically to the image itself. Would you like to describe that image and tell us about that effect it had on you?
Yeah, so the image on the front cover is a photo of my daughter, at the time she was age 4, like running in the rain in a kind of vacant lot on the Hudson River in Brooklyn. And it was an absolutely torrential downpour, maybe the heaviest downpour that I've ever experienced. We were just out walking, started pouring down, and we kind of ducked into this warehouse. The warehouse was open on both sides, but it was completely empty. And we were standing there watching this downpour, and she just ran out into the rain. And I had my camera there, and I took this photo, and it kind of captures her in motion. And then, of course, we both ran out into the rain. It was this really kind of intense, and like, it was a joyful experience. We were both kind of in the middle of one of the biggest cities in the world, but having this kind of connection with nature that was really intensely in the moment.
Splashing and about in the rain.
That's it, yeah. And then when I looked at the photo, of course, you think, you know, look back on it, you think, oh, how amazing was that moment? And I guess, like, the album I wrote when I was on residency, mostly of it was on residency at the Banff Centre in Canada, and I was lucky to have my family also there with me. You know, I have quite a young family, and it was there's something about the writing process that made me reflect on my own experiences. My, you know, it's something about being or becoming a parent, I think, makes you remember things about your own childhood as well, and remember about the experiences that kind of defined you. And there's something about nostalgia as an emotion, very, very kind of complex and multi-layered, and you're kind of aware that how you feel isn't even necessarily accurate. But there's something about kind of, you know, as an adult, then like revisiting these intense emotional experiences as a young person, and then also kind of sharing like similar experiences with my own children through that process, and kind of wondering about their future context for them. So I don't know if what I've said makes any sense at all, but it's kind of, you know, we're always surrounded by these kind of very powerful emotions that we feel about things, and most often I would struggle to explain them accurately in words, but I feel when I sit down at the piano bench to write work, even though it's quite an abstract form, I can represent these things more accurately through music. There's something about being able to string together multi-layered multitude of emotions that we feel about something that music can and always has represented for me, that it's really the only art form that does that for me.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
There's 9 pieces on the album, and they are very emotive, I think, in their content, one particularly for me, but let's have a little bit of a chat about 2 or 3 of them. Adelaide, growing up and being a parent, that sort of builds upon what you've just been saying about looking at life and now being a parent and interacting with other parents. I understand from what I've read that Adelaide is really you looking back when you were a young person in Adelaide.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're never totally sure of the accuracy of our like memories or the kind of nostalgic feelings that we have. But you become more aware as an adult of the kind of the complexity of all of the kind of dynamics, family and otherwise, that you've experienced as a child in a very kind of innocent and rather carefree way. But then as you become a teenager and then an adult, you become aware of these things. And it's a very kind of unsettling experience in some ways, or at least there's kind of some anxiety and some sense of coming to terms, being unshackled or coming to terms with yourself through that process. And so Adelaide is kind of a tune in 2 parts. And again, it's not like I kind of like plan these things out. Just you kind of start exploring these ideas and reading lots of things, and then you write and it comes together in a way that's not really describable as to why you feel that it explains that thing, but it kind of does.
It just happens.
Exactly, yeah.
Forest Dance is one that takes you away from your Adelaide sense, it sounds like a wonderful philosophy behind looking back to that part of your life, something that's a little bit different.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I think I grew up in the Adelaide Hills. As an adult, I always kind of, or as a young person, I always imagined that I would, like, live in, like a metropolis somewhere. And so I have been very fortunate to travel a lot. And I've loved being in the kind of major metropolis that I've found myself in. But I had this similar experience to Tim Winton describes in his book, A Landscape Memoir, where you expect that you're going to go to Europe for the first time or New York for the first time, and, you know, you're going to feel like you're coming home. You know, it's just the place that, like, through all the literature and all the arts you consume, like, this is the place. And then you go away and you feel kind of completely unshackled in that place, and you come back home and you realise that your home was always your home, and you kind of have to come to terms with that, and it's a weird thing to do. And for me, a part of that is also kind of in the not really in the country, but in the kind of the hills, and I'm like, I need to be around trees.
Yeah.
and hills, and that's what makes me happy. But it took me many years to kind of come to terms with that.
The one piece, Ross, that really spoke to me, and I've had to listen to it multiple times, is called Processional. I listened to it and I thought, oh, you've got the wrong name, it's a recessional. But then I read the story about it and it made perfect sense, and it just made it even more beautiful.
You never know what this is going to impact with other people, but that's one that that's kind of people keep coming back to, which is one of my favourite album tracks on the album too. It was also one of the ones that came together the quickest. It was like, you know, it took about 10 minutes to write. I don't know the universal thing, but every parent I've kind of spoken to about this tune has said that they've also experienced something like this. It's like when your most precious things in your entire life are your kids, and you kind of can't help but be kind of scared for them. And because of that, you can't help but be scared of the things that might happen to them. And so you occasionally, in your weaker moment, imagine terrible things. And this is like a moment where, I was a twin when I was born, but my twin died of SIDS when I was 9 months old. And my parents, as them becoming a parent, thinking about them losing a child, I just don't even know how they got through that. And so this was kind of me coming to terms with that process as I can't remember, obviously, because I was only 9 months old, but as a kind of coming to terms with that as a parent, not as a young person finding out about it, kind of imagining that thing of, well, you know, what is it like to bury your own child? And this was very dark, but it's kind of like, I can't represent the way that I feel about that to you in words, but I think that I can through that composition. That's kind of actually a good example of what I meant about that experience of writing for me.
And it certainly has done that, Ross. It is a beautiful piece on an album that is a beautiful album to listen to. It's called Nothing Remains Unchanged. It really does reflect life in three simple words. Nothing remains unchanged. It is beautiful. Eric Harlan plays drums, Ben Wendell sax, Matthew Sheen's on the piano. Are we having a launch tour sometime?
Yes, definitely. So I'm working on that at the moment. Stay tuned.
We shall stay tuned indeed.
Before the end of this year.
I will be looking forward to coming along to that launch tour when it hits Melbourne and hearing the music live, because there's something about that live music. Ross, thank you so much for your time here on Bent Notes tonight. I have thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you, and I'm sorry that we have run out of time. I've had a great time talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you at some stage in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.